cliffcentral.com. Business Masterclass, I'm Adrian Groenewald, with me Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team. Hi, Richard.
How's it, Adrian? How are you doing?
Good, good. And Alison Yondu, the CEO and founder of
Candid Media.
Candid Media Group. So coming from the cushy but very tough editor environment and starting his own business in the world we're talking about here.
Absolutely.
So it's disruption. Very fascinating. It's exciting. And today, you know, we're going to talk all about human resource policies and procedures with André Willemse, who represents USB Ed today. André, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
André, you are actually in this space, aren't you? The HR executive. Tell us where.
Yes. I'm working with an organization called Omega People Solutions. Up until about a year ago, I was in corporate South Africa, working in the banking sector. And decided to venture off into to start helping SMEs and smaller businesses around HR.
That is the future. That's where we need to go, definitely. And well done on leaving the banking industry. That is a Richard.
I was going to say all the ex-bankers in the studio, put up your hand.
It's not Alice and I, but I mean that is an industry that I want to see change dramatically, transform with technology. And they must be tested, but not enough. We had an insurance.
You're talking about change or turnover.
Yeah,
you want to see turnover?
Yes. I mean, we had the Liberty CEO. Yeah, it seems the life industry is touched or affected by big change. I'm not so sure banks are really on top of it. Anyway, but good to have you all in the studio. Yeah, Richard Angus is going to kick us off. It's a very important conversation, you know, all around HR practices, which if you're a really small business, then I guess you need minimal of it, but as you grow, you need it more and more.
Well, Adrian, I mean, just to your comment now about, you know, how things are changing and is stuff changing in places like banks and insurers, etc. I mean, I think the reality is, and I mean, you remember when Jose was in studio with us a few week or two back,
I remember this LCCO.
The reality is, he mentioned and he said, you know, we said, who are your, or we talked about his competitors, and he mentioned the regulatory framework and, you know, and the whole principle of government and what they're doing. And I think the reality is that in the world today, when it comes to policies and procedures, and particularly in the world of our people, that's where you're seeing the most pressure. I mean, you know, you made the comment as we started, you know, where it's relevant in SMEs. Well, the reality is HR policies and procedures are becoming more and more relevant and important at smaller and smaller entities. And you're now actually almost at a point where if you've got a business and you employ one person, you better be aware of what's going on, because otherwise you're going to have a problem. So, I mean, André, maybe as a starting point, I mean, why are policies important in this realm of people in HR? I mean, why even have this conversation today?
I think the important thing here is that what we're trying to do is to create some kind of a framework for the organization to say to them, listen, you know, the most small companies and even some multinationals, what they do is they have a lot of policies, but they very seldom is a document that gets read a lot. So what we do is when there's a problem, they immediately start looking for the policies. And I mean, that creates a very good framework for whether it's a small organization or a big organization, because what it does, it says to you, listen, when in doubt, where can I go to when I need guidance? Where can I go and look? And that's a very good place to start. And I mean, you don't necessarily have to have a huge thick file of policies, but I think there are a couple of things that one would need to be mindful of. And what comes to mind is specifically things where it relates back to legislation, because there's implications. So where there's legislation around issues, make sure you're covered in terms of some kind of a policy.
And that's a bit heavy for small businesses in our country, I think.
Yeah, well, for example, you know, with small organizations, things like, for example, the risk is sometimes higher, because a lot of the small SMEs don't even have contracts. They employ people, but then you find out 2, 3, 4 months down the line that these guys don't have any form of formal contract. And when that relationship goes sour, then the business owner really has issues, big issues.
So, I mean, you know, we talk about policy, and then there's also this question of let's call it procedure. I mean, if I'm hiring somebody, do I need a policy or do I just have a procedure for hiring? What's the difference between the two?
Okay. The policy talks to the what. You know, what do you want to achieve? And that's that. And then the procedure is how you go about doing it. So the one, you cannot have a policy. Well, you shouldn't have a policy without a procedure.
Can I give us a simple example, a small SME listening?
So for example, let's say for example a small SME employs one or two salesmen. And those salesmen need, they're going to be traveling, they're going to be on the road. Now, for example, those guys would want to, well, they're going to be claiming, for example, for fuel and car and this, that, and the other. So there, that's a very good example of where you'd need a policy and a procedure. So, in other words, what size car can you drive? What kind of car are we going to buy? Those are the what issues. The how is, okay, how do I go about claiming for my expenses as a result of working for this small business?
Okay.
So yeah. that's how the two link.
So this is where the 15 forms come in, the paperwork,
the reams of paperwork from SAPI.
Andre, I have a question for you. You know, I come from a very state strict, you know, convoluted corporate environment, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And as a manager, I was never a fan of HR. I always saw HR is an inhibitor of what I'm trying to do, whether it's getting, you know, hiring people on time, getting, you know, the right sort of resources, you know, you hear all sort of excuses. So what I want to hear from you, how does managing people and setting up processes and procedures from an HR perspective differ for an SME versus a big corporation? Because I'm thinking there ought to be agility for the small guy because, you know, especially if you are bootstrapping your business.
Well, Ellis, can I step in here for a moment? Maybe let's go through the steps in policy development, and then you'll get a sense of there's kind of probably 8 or 9 steps that you need to look at around HR policies.
Correct.
And then we'll apply those to, you know, how they apply to an SME. And and I think you'll discover, quite unfortunately, that you may be able to skip steps, but if you ignore steps, you might be in trouble.
Okay.
So perhaps the first one is, so what is the need for a policy? So do you need to regulate this thing, yes or no, is I guess the fundamental question.
Absolutely. So what is it that, in other words, if you go and look at, if a small SME owner looks at his business and he says, all right, well, where are my potential biggest risks in terms of people? Now, there could only be 1 or 2 items, 3 items. Let's go and focus on those. Let's go and say, all right, what are those people risks and how do we go about mitigating them? And that's where so for a small SME, I mean, you could have a policy file of 4, 5, 6 pages. It doesn't have to be this, you know, 50-page document you have to plow through. So look at the risk. And how do we go about mitigating that risk in terms of a policy?
And the key thing here is you've got to have a really good handle on your industry and not try and do somebody I heard has this policy, therefore I must have it.
Yes.
So let's call it policies and risk evaluation is very industry specific and very almost tailored to your unique organization. Don't get sucked into the, you know, okay, I'm starting out. So
let me take. There's no templating.
Yeah. Mm. So don't go and take the template which says here are 80 HR policies and try and complete 80 policies because you are going to be wasting your time.
Exactly.
I think that's the key thing, and particularly as an SME where let's use an example. If you're in the services industry, okay, let's please not worry about issues that might be linked to manufacturing, for example, injury on duty. The reality is if I'm, a call center agent, the injury on duty is not is it going to be a paper cut and maybe a stapler problem. cutting off your hand with the machine is not an issue here. So we don't have to worry about a safety standard that you would worry about.
So that's the risk. That's the example of a risk you look at. I'm running a small factory.
Exactly.
The risk could be serious injury. So I need policies around that.
Yeah.
And and procedures around that. I run a small call center, but I probably don't need it.
You know? Correct. I mean, that's exactly what you do. I mean, for example, a guy who's running a small transport business and his employee is on the road all the time will look at his risk completely different to a guy who's was probably sitting in some other kind of service center or as an example.
Yeah.
But that's where the business owner needs to look at his business and say, all right, now really, I mean, where could I potentially land myself into the CCMA or being taken to court for whatever reason? What do I then need to do to mitigate that risk?
Yeah. I recently heard of an incident in a manufacturing environment where they have a certain process, a policy in place around safety standards. And one of the technical people, there was a problem with this packing robotic arm that they have. And this guy just went in, and because he decided he wanted to get this thing fixed and sorted, he just turned off the safety kind of controls around this machine, went into the cage to go sort it out, and the thing grabbed him by the arm and packed him. And now he's trying to take on the employer for failing to adhere to standards. And the employer's response was, but you turned off the safety equipment. And, you know, so those are the kind of things. If you don't have a policy in place, and he, thank goodness, in their case, had signed off on a little form in his employment contract that said, I will agree to abide by the safety standards set by the employer. He made the choice to turn off the safety equipment. Therefore, by implication, they now cannot be held liable for the damages that were there.
But there's a risk with that situation, though. What happens if the employer had condoned the switching off at some point in the past?
Yeah. No, well, I mean, that's always... And then you get into that's into the merits of the case. But, I mean, the whole point is the policies and procedures that they established were very clearly, this is what the demarcated area is. These are the safety standards that apply. It's relevant because they're in the manufacturing and packaging industry. Therefore, this is what applies. And the call center doesn't have the same requirement. Yeah.
And I think what's important there is that it's the business owner's responsibility to make sure that those employees that he has employed are fully cognizant of what the policies are all about. In other words, that does he have the Basic Conditions of Employment Act stuck up on his wall or in the cafeteria where employees can see this stuff? Because that's very important. You know, you it's one thing to have a policy, it's another thing to say, well, do my employees actually know what are in those policies? Which is critical. Yeah. You know, there needs to be it's a two-way street.
Ignorance is not consent.
Exactly.
The other thing to highlight just on this point, Andrew, from my own experience, I learned that, you know, policy is not worth the paper it's on if it's not applied consistently across.
Yes.
Yeah.
What would you say to that?
Well, I think that's where the tone from the top is very, very important. In other words, the owner of the business must lead by example. And if the owner of the business is not doing it, then it's going to be very difficult for the supervisors and managers to comply.
Okay, so let's just answer this question. I mean, what is the role? I mean, ultimately, the board of a company is ultimately responsible for the policies and procedures and what gets implemented. So to Ellis's point, what is the role of, let's call them, the board, and let's call it executive management in setting and approving these policies, etc.? Just give us some insight there.
Right. The board's responsibility is strategic oversight. In other words, they must sign off on any policy that gets drafted. The CEO or the MD or the owner of the business, his responsibility is operational implementation of those policies and procedures. In other words, the day-to-day management of those policies, that remains the responsibility of the business owner. And it's very important that the owner of the business and the board work hand in hand around any type of policy that needs to be drafted and applied to the organization.
Now, I mean, let's talk a little about, let's call it policy content. I mean, how do you go about developing appropriate policy content? I mean, we spoke earlier about avoid the template. I mean, obviously, there is an element of templating that one can get to. And in fact, in some environments, you want to use very specific terms and process of Basic Conditions of Employment Act, define certain things certain ways, and you cannot define them any other way, for example. You know, the definition of various, you know, things in your workplace conditions, your leave, etc. You can't just decide that the work week now is defined as 7 days a week because that's what you feel like. So be careful of doing that, I guess. How do you go about developing policy content? Where do you start?
Well, I think the most important thing is to know what's going on in your own industry. So a bit of market intelligence is very important. If you know what your competitors are up to and the kind of market you're operating in, that gives you a very good framework to start. Because that says, all right, if this is what's happening in my industry, these are the things that I need to make sure I focus on. So make sure that you that your market intelligence is good. Also, just from a policy point of view, I mean, I've seen policies that are very good policies that are written that are one page long. I've also seen some good policies that are 5 pages long. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, if we're talking about SME market, I think one mustn't over-engineer the thing.
Yeah, they can't afford attorneys and you know, exactly. teams of legal advisors and things.
Mm. Exactly.
So what's the solution just on that? Because, you know, as an SME owner, I'm thinking, do I need an auditor? Of course I do. But where do I go, you know, for an accountant? There's accounting software and things like that. Is there such, from an HR standpoint, for coming up with all this, are there tools of that nature?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, very much like the FD or the finance guy who has a pretty robust system which he must account for in terms of his financials, there is in terms of HR as well. Now once again, with HR, you can buy a very expensive HR system, or you can buy a bottom of the range thing that'll get you through. So it's horses for courses, but there's definitely something there for the SME owner in terms of running HR.
Hmm. Now, I mean, I guess drafting the policy and writing everything up, I mean, there's certain, as you say, templates, etc., nuances. There's also a process that one needs to manage around how you keep those policies current and relevant, because all policies that one has within a company almost, let's call it, age. So some policies need to be reviewed on a regular basis. And in fact, within the legal framework, if I'm not mistaken, there are policies that you have to review every so often. I mean, let's pick one that's topical at the moment. I saw there's some commentary the other night on the whole question of employment equity again, and now there's some big issues happening there again. You know, your employment equity plan, for example, is part of a policy framework.
Mm-hmm.
That should be reviewed how often, et cetera, et cetera. And there will be other policies out there. How do you manage that process in your experience?
Well, I think the most important thing here is to make sure that the business owner is linked into the various government websites. I mean, particularly the Department of Labor. Because what the Department of Labor does is they actually list before a policy becomes practice, it's open to scrutiny, it's open to comment. But once it becomes law, it's then incumbent on the owner to make sure that he knows what's going on in terms of those changes. So the Government Gazette, they're always listed. It's normally what I find is where there isn't a full-time HR person on board, it's normally the owner or the person responsible for finance would take responsibility for the HR stuff, and then there you'd have to make sure. So I think the most important one. Look, there's a lot of websites you can get into to find out what's hot in terms of HR policies. But I think the most important one for a business owner is the Department of Labor's website, because in the Department of Labor's website, it'll talk to all the issues around employment equity. It'll talk about the basic conditions changes, skills development, all those things that change on a regular basis.
It's hot stuff to be an SME owner, isn't it? I mean, you want to just go out there and sell and build your business.
There's a lot of legalese in that stuff. You want to be lazy on that stuff.
Well, can I take us back to a comment that we've made on the show time and time and time again? Make sure when you're dealing with some of these issues, if it seems complex to you, go out there, find the right expert to consult with. It's money well spent, because if you're not consulting with the right person, as they always say, you know, the pain comes later.
Yeah, but Richard, we're talking SMMEs here. I mean, you have to be realistic. I'm now thinking, is there something that the Department of Small Business Development could do just on the labor issues to come with a sort of an intervention to help small businesses, because they don't have money for lawyers.
Well, interestingly, so if I can refer perhaps to another environment, you know, in the world of accounting, they simplified accounting policies and practices for smaller businesses. Okay. And you have to ask yourself the question, does it not make sense that within the challenges we're facing as a country, that the small business guys shouldn't be turning around and saying, you know, we're in the small business ministry, we're accountable for making life easier for the SME, therefore we're going to make sure that the following key elements of labor and the Labor Act are under control, but we're going to simplify all of this stuff. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had the privilege of spending time getting something as simple as your letter of good standing out of the Department of Labor.
Mm.
It's probably easier to give birth sometimes. and they can never, you can never get an absolute answer, and it's administration, and it's really hectic. Mm. And you look at this and you think to yourself, well, hold on a second. I'm a small business. I want to just run with things. I get asked by my large corporate clients, I need your letter of good standing and I mean, tenders, you know, just like you have to have a BE certificate and your letter from your bank saying that you do bank with them and this is your bank account number, your letter of good standing is up there as well now as one of the requirements. And the reality is the small business ministry could make the process is so much easier from a labor perspective, but they're not focusing on that right now, and perhaps they should be.
So I think it's the opportunity for platforms like this, you know, to challenge them to act in that fashion, because really we think of enabling, you know, small business development in other ways, but it starts with basic things like understanding how you manage people. You know, just like Andre says.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so Richard, we were running down that list.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the other element is, I mean, how do you make sure that all the key people in your business have gone through this policy and are ticking the box, so to speak?
Mm. Well, first of all, I think that it's very important that if you're running a small SME, make sure that everybody that's employed, whether they're temporary, whether they're contractors, whether they're permanent, have some kind of a contract. And in that contract, you would make reference to your policies and procedures. Then I think it's very important to communicate it to them. And there's various means. If it's a small business, it can literally just be getting the guys around the table and taking them through it. Another means is to send it to them via email and get some kind of response out of them. Say to them, guys, this is what we believe is critical. Can we have your feedback? So that consultation process is very important. You can't. I think it's quite dangerous for a business owner just to go and draft policies and you know, not getting some kind of feedback from even if it's a, but let's say a medium-sized business where he's got supervisors or managers, or even the union for that matter, to get them involved. Mm. Get them involved in the, because otherwise you don't do it, it comes back to bite you later.
Well, the places where it bites you is when things go wrong and you pull out the policy and you say, but we had a way to manage this risk. And then the person obviously will turn around because they're now the guilty party and say, no, but I didn't know about that. Mm. And then you're left with a he said, she said type of scenario, and you can't actually, and all your effort going into drafting the policy and managing the risk has come to naught because you didn't manage the implementation process properly and keep a track of it. And it's also not just about, well, somebody's read the policy, because reading the policy is one thing, understanding the, let's call it the spirit of the policy and what to do and how to react and respond is probably the more important part.
Mm-hmm.
It's less about the words and more about the action, I guess, in terms of the policy and application.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, how do you communicate changes in policy? I mean, what are some of the things you've seen out there that people could be doing and using?
Well, I think one of the things that's very good is that what I've seen in some companies is that as soon as there are incidents in the company, let's say, for example, there's harassment issues or there's late coming or there's leave issues, then what the business owner would do is he would send out the policy that relates to a leave or to late coming or whatever. So because that that's very topical and it's very.
This is known as
reactionary.
This is known as the after the horse's bolted methodology.
That's. I mean, that's the reactive way of doing it. But the proactive way is that you know, on a regular basis, what I always did is on a monthly basis, I would take segments of the policies, the policies that relate to each other. For example, a good example is leave, and there's different kinds of leave. You talk about those things. You say, all right, guys, this is the policy. But then, in a short sentence or paragraph, you explain the implications thereof. So, what does it actually mean if we talk about leave, and we talk about, you know, the implications of maternity leave or paternity leave, whatever the case may be. You know, make it practical. So people can actually relate to something that is sometimes quite theoretical.
And talking policies through in staff meetings and the like, and I mean, I've used an example or a scenario before where I ask people to read the policy and then come to the meeting and somebody, not in the management team, but somebody from the floor per se, explain to us what you understand this policy is about. You know, so, okay, this is the paternity policy. It means I'm going to get a day's leave if my wife, or 2 days leave, whatever it is, if my wife's had a baby. Okay, cool, we're on the same page. Or I'm going to get 3 weeks leave. No, it's 3 days, whatever it may be.
So would it be wise to actually, in your diary as an SME owner, once a week, once a month, to have, I don't know, call it a policy meeting. It could be to communicate the policy. It could be to discuss the procedures. It could be
updates.
But just to force you to now and then think policy, because how many times have you thought policy as you started your own business, Alice?
Never.
I'm not thinking policy, but I'm from a policy paralysis sort of situation.
So you're almost averse to that,
which is why I really want to ask Andrew the following question. You know, from that perspective, I mean, how do companies, or whether it's a small business, make sure that policy doesn't become the stumbling block? Because I remember, for example, you know, when we first heard about, you know, policy for social media, for example, how to tweet, when to tweet, it was not as an enablement sort of scenario. It was to say, thou shalt not do this.
That was to make sure you won't be a twit face.
Well, you see all the things happening today, and you think, we need policy again.
Maybe just briefly, Andrew, at what point do you just make sure that policy doesn't become a stumbling block?
I think the most important thing here is that it mustn't be a once-a-year event or an event where there's a crisis. Then everybody knows about the policy. Because then people, it's psychological. People see the policy as something that's always, when there's a problem, we pull out the policy manual. It must be an ongoing thing, as you quite rightly said. You know, the people thing should be on any business owner's agenda every single week, talking about people. And one of the items you can talk about under people is policies. But let it become a sort of like a part of your daily or your weekly or your monthly routine. Don't wait when there's a problem, then let's talk about why you can tweet or not tweet. but let's at the beginning of the year, let's talk about, you know, the things that we think are going to be important, and make it ongoing. At staff meetings, talk about it. Send out emails when the business owner is walking the shop floor. Talk about it. Don't keep it in your back pocket.
And policy needs to live. It's not, you know, the policy and it's in the bottom drawer somewhere. Absolutely. It's actually how we do things around here.
Yes.
And just a final comment from my side in terms of implementation. If you link policies and values and the way we do things around here, in the classic saying, you actually get a better effect. So if people understand, and the policy is, let me call it, logical in the context of your organization, then, you know, if you say, for example, you know, integrity and respect are important parts of your value.
Or you say the customer comes first, but then you get in there, you get shoddy service.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At the induction, the language was different.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's all about integrity and trust and respect, you know, you don't have to have a Facebook policy that says, you know, when you post on Facebook, be pleasant about how you interact. People know that's what's expected of you and your organization, because the policy is informed by the value statements of the organization.
Yeah.
All right, so that is it. HR policies and procedures. We will have a part two somewhere, I think. Yeah. We didn't get through the whole list, did we?
No, we did.
We did pretty good.
We did pretty well.
Okay, Andre Willems.
We shortened a few for Ellis.
I threw in a little curveballs there, so your script didn't quite.
That's why you're here. Thank you, Andre Willemser from USB Ed. We really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Today.
Thank you very much.
Let's try and make more sense of this in the future. Richard Angus, thank you, and Alison Nyandu. Next up, we interview a social entrepreneur. I think fascinating, different from what we've had before. So stay with us.
Download the Cliff Central app, available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. CliffCentral.com.